Welcome to the RSP cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And I have to say, I'm going to brag a little bit because, you know, I don't usually have this kind of cachet, but it was late on a Friday afternoon. And I've been trying to do a podcast all week, but I've been kind of emotionally exhausted. And I happened to see this guy on Twitter for a moment. And I thought, I'm just going to take a shot and see if I can hit him up. And he's one of my favorite people in this industry, and he is doing so well. And you know him from Yahoo, you know him from Reception Perception, and that's Matt Harmon. And I was so lucky to have Matt just say, hey, yeah, I could do one in 30 minutes. And I just thought we'd do a free form show because I'm about drafted out, you know, until we find out where all these guys are. And I thought it'd be fun, who better to chop it up with than you?
I mean, it is so funny. Like, it's just, it's a pretty good time to be needing someone to talk on your podcast. I feel like I've seen, and not that this is that situation, but I feel like I've seen, you know, big time analysts out there on like smaller time podcasts than I have in, you know, any recent time, like on Twitter. Like, you know, someone hits me up on Instagram, like, hey, come on my podcast. You know, I have like 5,000 followers. I'm like, damn, I got the time, you know, like what, I'm inside, what else am I gonna do? So yeah, it's a pretty good, and I mean, but for you, Waldman, I probably would have done that at any other point, because as you said, like, we've been friends for a long time. You're one of my favorites as well, so I'm happy to chop it up with you about whatever we end up talking about here.
Yeah, we're just gonna keep it kind of loose here and just go through it. And one of the things that just kind of came to mind early on is, earlier in the month, while I was doing the RSP, I saw that Nelson Aguilar went to the Raiders, and both Harmon and I were Nelson Aguilar fans, so we were joking about pouring one out. But I'm just curious, in general, was there anybody in this free agent class, whether they re-signed with the team or signed with a new one, from a wide receiver perspective, or anybody that you saw that you really thought was notable and that you like where they ended up, or you hate where they ended up?
Yeah. You know, this receiver crop in free agency was interesting, 'cause like at the top, I mean, if you want to count the Stephon Diggs trade within there too, I mean, the trade market right away, like we have DeAndre Hopkins, you know, goes from the Texans to the Cardinals in what I say confidently is the worst trade of all time. And like, you know, I wrote this article for Yahoo where I said that, like, this is the worst NFL trade of all time. And of course, like, I mean, it was like, Waldman, you know, you hit on an article when like you've got boomers sending you like on Facebook messages, like, or, you know, one of the, you know, on Facebook when you can write those like words within pictures and put them on people's wall. I had people doing that on like my personal Facebook, like, guess you need to study up. Guess you never heard of the Herschel Walker trade and all this stuff. And like, I was like, yeah, I know I got it. this one hit. But I mean, so yeah, I mean, we have a lot of like free agent and also trade, like kind of interest from the wide receiver perspective, whether it's Hopkins, whether it's Diggs, whether it's Cooper going back to Dallas. I mean, and then of course it kind of drops off to a point where it's like, well, Robbie Anderson and Carolina, and even that one's kind of interesting because I think that makes that receiver core really interesting with Moore, Samuel, and Anderson there. But yeah, I mean, this was an interesting offseason for sure for receiver movement.
Yeah, two that were notable for me. I mean, certainly it was, you know, Brandon Cooks is a fine player, but it's interesting that they just decided to put him in Houston, because it's kind of like, that's not a replacement for what DeAndre Hopkins does.
Yeah, and no, not at all.
No, not at all. So it's kind of like, you want, you know, there's that with Cooks. And then the guy, this is the way off the radar one, but I've always been a fan of Keelan Cole. I think he regained his confidence down the stretch. And they kept talking about that as a steady drumbeat about him last spring.
Yeah.
And they signed him to a second round tender in Jacksonville. So I'm kind of like, as a sneaky, sneaky guy again, I think he might have a chance to kind of reprise that role. And of course, the Jaguars will probably draft somebody in the second or third round that, like, you know, completely kiboshes that, but I still kind of like what I saw from Cole. You know, in just in terms of the reception perception, I mean, I think everyone knows what that's about. And if you don't, you know, you definitely need to check out what Matt does at the Fantasy Footballers with his reception perception package. It's a study of both, you know, the metrics as well as the film, and looking at route success and success with separation. And I'm probably not describing it as well. So Matt, do you mind describing it in better detail than I just did?
Sure. I mean, it's the methodology that I developed back in 2014 to best quantify the qualitative reality of route running, because it's one of those things that you hear people toss around all the time, you know, or like you're watching a game on Sunday, you inherently can't see what the receiver is doing because they run off the screen for the most part, unless it's a very short route or a screen play or something like that. So there's so much unknown there. There's so much unseen. And I think wide receiver is one of the hardest. Like, there's really no football position that I think you can just evaluate from like a basic stats perspective, because everything is in relationship with each other. And I think wide receiver is probably the most dependent, if not the most dependent position on other factors in order to accrue production. Because for as a wide receiver, you in order to, you know, just get a catch, a yard or a touchdown, whatever, you need to, number one, you need the pass to go your way. You need it to be a good and accurate pass. You need the quarterback to have decided to throw the ball to you. You need the quarterback to not screw it up before he releases the ball. You need the offensive line to block well. You need the play call to even just be in your way. All that type of stuff needs to go right. But the only thing that the receiver can control is running a good route, getting separation, and presenting an open target. So I thought to myself back in 2014 when I was just starting my own website, Backyard Banter, I was like, somebody should be my biggest question about the game that I find to be unanswered is who's really good at that? Like, what's going on before the ball even gets there? And my thought was, well, I mean, I'm just going to be the one to answer that. So what I do is, over a sample of 8 games for NFL players, I go in and chart every single route that they run and measure who's the most effective against man, zone, press, and within each individual route. So it's a slog, it's a grind, but it's been great, especially these last 2 years, because I have this wide set of data now going back to the 2014 season. So, and especially fun for guys like Brandon Cooks, who we just talked about, or Odell Beckham, or Allen Robinson, that class. Like, I have their entire careers mapped out with reception perception. So you can see where they grow, what stays the same, what's different. And I also know so much more about the series than I did, you know, in 2000, like there are things that I said maybe in 2017 about receivers and reception perception that I wouldn't say now, because you see the everything develop so much more. You have just a wider set of data.
Like what?
Well, I mean, one perfect example, this is the easiest example to make, because it's very it's very loud and obvious. But I remember the second article that I wrote about reception perception, when I was just like testing the data out, was about Cordarrelle Patterson in 2000, coming off his 2013 season. I wrote this on Backyard Banter. I was like, put him through reception perception. And I was like, hey, this guy has he was open on 49% of his routes against man coverage. Like, that's really good. That's almost half. Like, that seems great. But this is the second player I've ever tracked. Like, I shouldn't have said anything about it. So, like, now I know that's like one of the worst possible scores I could give out. So, like, things, that's a very like loud and obvious one. But then there are other examples where I just realized, like, if you have a sub 20%. So, or 20, like sub 20th percentile success rate versus man coverage or press coverage, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad player. It might just mean that you need a certain role to make you successful. And I can give examples like Cooper Kupp, Juju Smith-Schuster. Those are players who fit within that category that I just mentioned. Like, they're not very successful against man or press coverage, but they have these very unique roles, and they've benefited because of those roles. And that doesn't, again, just because they're not up there with like some of the best separators in the NFL, that doesn't mean that they're bad players or that they're going to be failures in fantasy. It's just all about like, okay, this is what this player does well. How can I then find a place to use him? And, you know, there are certainly players in reception perception like Cordarrelle Patterson. Justin Hunter is another example. Like, of these, Marquise Lee, some of these goofballs I've put through reception perception that have just been not good at anything, and they eventually fall off the map. But there are other players that that are just, they're good at particular things, but they might not show up within each individual metric. So there's not like a pass fail here. And it's, the series is not meant to do that. You can certainly take it as like, okay, this guy is really good against man coverage, but he's not getting a lot of targets. Maybe he breaks out someday. And there have been a lot of successful players like that in reception perception, but that's just not what it always means.
I love how you explained that. It was so fantastic. And it underscores a point that I actually had earlier today on a podcast with a couple of guys from London. We were talking about what, you know, I've learned about scouting over the years. And it was the exact same thing, which is that I think we too consciously or subconsciously have this bias that we're grading people on a 100% type of scale against, yes. You know, they need to be 100%, you know, breadth of talent, 100% depth of talent. And that, you know, and to me, what that means is like, they have to run every route. They have to be able to be successful at every skill that the wide receiver position could be. And then they have to be great at all of those things on top of that. And so everybody's going, I'm expecting this guy to be graded against 100 in that kind of dimension. When they're really, the reality is there's some really damn good starters who may be like 42-65, you know, or maybe even 18, you know, 75, you know, and it's like they may do 18% of what you think a wide receiver should do, but what they do that better than maybe 85% of the people who are on the earth, you know. So it's like, you have to understand it's about finding that fit. And that's such a, and it is a thing that it creeps into all of us in the perception of, you know, how we look at players. So if you guys have, if any of you are listening and you're new to Matt's work and you've heard that for the first time, I highly, highly encourage you, no matter what, like this year, next year, the year after, because Matt's going to be doing this a while, reception perception is fantastic, fantastic analysis. And one of the things that I'd love to know from you right now is who stood out over the years for you or continues to stand out or maybe even stood out for you recently, good or bad?
I'm glad you framed that because it was another thing that I was going to bring up that I've learned from this series. And every now and again, I get people will say like, why don't you ever talk about who you think is bad? Like you talk a lot about the players that you view positively. Like I know very well, maybe all too well, who you like, you know, in reception perception or whatever, but I don't often know who you don't like. And that's something else I've learned, which is I am so much more confident in reception perception's ability to tell me who is good than to tell me who is bad. Because like I mentioned earlier, I think if a player is bad in one metric, then they might just need a different type of role. But I'm very confident that when a player pops in their, like the success rate versus man coverage metric, that they're going to be very good at some point. In fact, I can say like, if you're looking at players that have, you know, finished above the 83rd percentile in reception perception, even cut it down to all the way to 80th, I don't think there has never been a player that has finished above that 80th percentile and then gone on to not have success at some point in their NFL career. Like, and I'm talking, you know, like 900 plus yards or something in a season like that, like clearly good players. In fact, the only player right now that is kind of testing that model is Curtis Samuel from last season. Like he finished up there actually even much higher than the 80th percentile. You know, he's up above the 90th percentile. And you know, I was really excited about him coming into last season, but I was also really expecting him last season to be playing with Cam Newton, a former MVP quarterback, and not a guy who can't push the ball more than 5 yards downfield in Kyle Allen. So,
yeah,
we'll see what happens there. But the point just of that is like, I am so much more confident in the ability of this series to tell me who is really good versus tell me who is really bad. And on that note, like a couple of guys, this is an exciting time to be analyzing wide receivers, because like not only are we talking, like everybody's talking about how good this 2020 class is, right? You know, like everybody's talking about that this is a very good class, it's very deep, whatever. But like I would argue that I think we underrated the previous two draft classes in 2018 and 2019. And
yes,
honestly, it's not even just like I had a couple of these guys really high on my board. Like there have been verifiably good, productive players in the NFL out of those classes so far. Like, think about 2018. You've got DJ Moore. You've got Calvin Ridley. You've got Cortland Sutton. You've got, I might be forgetting, Michael Gallup. He had an awesome season last year for the Cowboys. He's a player I'm really high on. Like, those guys have all pretty much broken out. And I, again, I might be spacing on other guys from that class, but like, then flip it forward to this class from 2019. You've got DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Debo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, Marquise Brown, like five guys. I think that you could argue which one of, like, you can argue that any of them might end up being the best pro. I mean, I have certain ideas on my own, but like, this is a really good time to be analyzing wide receivers. And on that note, like, DK Metcalf in particular was a fun player to study in reception perception, because I was so like annoyed with the analysis leading up to him in last year's draft.
When we talked on your podcast about him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, this is a guy that people picked apart so much, and I just really didn't think it was that hard. Like, he's a freak show, right? Like, he's big, fast, and he gets off the line of scrimmage against press coverage because he's a badass. And like, the evaluation to me was always, he's Dez Bryant. Like, Dez Bryant, when he was a freak show, he was not technically precise. He wasn't always the best, like, change of direction type player, but he was bigger, faster, and stronger than everybody else. And he's a player who, like, nobody thinks he's a good route runner. I don't think Dez was like a good route runner, but he could run
like three routes, maybe.
Right. But he finished at the 88th percentile in 2014 in success rate versus man coverage and reception perception. And DK Metcalf this past year finished at 83. So like, same thing, you know, I mean, and like, you sparse out his route tree. Yeah. Like 60 to 70% of them are 3 to 4 routes, but who cares? Right. Yeah. But he's good.
Yes. And it's like we talked about last year, it's like, I used analogy last year in the draft. It's like, listen, DK Metcalf is a hammer. If you go to the hardware store and you need a hammer, you get the freaking hammer. You don't expect it to be a screwdriver. You don't expect it to be a table saw. You don't expect it to be a plunger. You don't expect it to be a multi-use tool. You expect it to do basically to hammer nails in, pull nails out. Or if you're in the case of a serial killer in Dexter, maybe do something worse. But hey.
Yeah. For the most part, normal, well-adjusted humans.
Yes. You know, but, you know, and, you know, so we know that basically what you can do with a hammer, and that, you know, maybe occasionally use it as a leverage tool. That's fine. But it's like, you know, it is what it is. And if you're expecting to be something different, then you're an idiot for like, you know, picking him to put him to have him run other types of routes. So what do you think about it? I loved AJ Brown.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I want to know what you think of him and what you thought of anything that you've analyzed about his game.
Yeah. He was one of the first players that I wanted to chart for this year's reception perception, because just like you, I really loved him as a college player. And like, obviously he comes in and has an incredible rookie season. He's one of those guys that like, I would trust any random goofball at a bar to like watch the game and be like, he's really good, because you know, he does so many things well, you know, that like, I don't think you need to have the greatest knowledge of technique at wide receiver to really tell you like, that's a good player. But of course, like, I think reception perception can be like, okay, how good of a player is he? And you know, I just mentioned, this is amazing. This is an amazing thing that probably nobody else cares about, but I think is really interesting. DK Metcalf, like I mentioned, 83rd percentile success rate versus man coverage score at 73.9%. AJ Brown, his former teammate, 83rd percentile in his rookie year, 73.9% success rate versus man coverage. Like, the exact same score. Wow. Obviously they get it done in different ways, because you know, Metcalf is that big physical freak, where I think AJ Brown is technically precise, also running a lot more diverse routes than DK Metcalf is. But I just thought that was interesting. But the most impressive thing about AJ Brown to me, I think a lot of people comped him to like that Juju Smith-Schuster style receiver. Like, he should really be a big slot, because he played a lot of slot receiver for Ole Miss the last year he was there, because, you know, you have DK on the outside, you had another guy on the outside, whatever, like, make use of his skill set there. But as a rookie, he really played like the pure number one X receiver role for the Tennessee Titans. Like, once he got going, you know, always on the line of scrimmage, not, you know, being moved around to different positions. And I thought that was so that just makes his rookie season that much more impressive to me, because then you see him pop, you know, with a really good score against press coverage. You see him pop as an intermediate and deep route runner in certain areas. So, I mean, it's just really hard not to be like sky high on this player, because like, not only did he have a good rookie season and exceed people's expectations in that regard, he, even within having a good rookie season, I think when you really parse it out to the role he was playing, it was even more impressive than even I expected it to be.
Yeah, and it's one of the things about him. I mean, I comped him. If I could have given the comp officially, I would have said his comp was Magic Johnson, which makes no sense for people, you know, who thinking football. But I think of Magic Johnson where he could play center, guard, forward.
Right.
And he did all of that. And it's like A.J. Brown playing the X was like Magic Johnson playing center when Kareem got hurt way back in the day in a championship series game and scoring a crap ton of points, you know, and doing that. And I think AJ Brown's one of those guys because he's so versatile and so technically skilled. And you have to say that he's like DK Metcalf's little brother athletically, from the standpoint of strength, that to even like make it diminish AJ Brown's like physicality, because if DK Metcalf weren't in this draft, we'd be talking about how a massive of an athlete this guy is. And the interesting thing is I think this is the guy who's most likely in that class to have like a 12 to 15 year career, because when he starts to slow down, I think he's going to wind up being an unbelievable slot receiver who can kind of Anquan as Bolden his way through like 800, 900 yard seasons for 2 to 3 years after he's like his athletic ability has long slowed down. So I'm with you. I'm totally in love with AJ Brown's game. So what about, you know, this class? Have you watched any of the players in this class, and just kind of any thoughts about anybody who stood out to you that you particularly like, or you listen to and you're just thinking, I don't really get it right now, you know, what people are saying.
This is a fun class to study. I mean, I think it lives up to the hype of its depth for sure. Like there are guys all, you know, in round two that I think, much like that 2014 class, which is our last like great, you know, hyped up historic type wide receiver class, I think there are guys in round two that could easily end up being number one receivers if all things break right, you know. And I think it's a fun class to study too, because it's just there are a couple of guys in the class that I think they need like the right type of role, like I mentioned earlier, but that's so readily available now because you have teams playing multiple receiver sets. You have teams, you know, being very creative about how they're deploying receivers. And I mean, it's a, like I said, it's a great class to like kind of dive into, especially some of these early round guys. Like at this point in my career, you know, I'm not doing what you're doing, man, you know, where you're looking at like 300 receivers, because you know, you're nuts. But yeah, like, so I'm very familiar with like some of the, with a lot of the top guys, you know, in the class, like sure. Guys that are probably gonna be like, you know, round one to three picks or whatever. And, you know, for me, I think it comes with those top two guys. Like with the article that I was just finishing before, when you hit me up, was my Jerry Jeudy eval. It is hard to like parse between the two guys, CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, but at the top. But for me, like CeeDee Lamb is my number one because he does everything extremely well. Like I think he's underrated as a route runner. I mean, Judy's like
me too.
Yeah, he does like the little things that I think are not like anybody can look at Jerry Jeudy, and again, like any goofball in a bar can be like, that's a really good route runner. Like you don't need me to tell you that. But I think some subtleties within Lamb's game really shows that he can be that type of player. I think he has this great, like almost authoritative like march towards a cornerback that really does remind me so much of Hopkins, and then also he's like Hopkins at the catch point too, so he's an exciting player. And then Jeudy obviously is just like such a master technician that it's easy to get excited about him too.
Yeah, and I think with Lamb is, I think, explodes out of his breaks better. Like when he really plants and explodes, I think there's a little bit more there. I think he's a little more patient in a way where he's efficient with his route. Whereas I think Jerry Jeudy, as good as he is, and I don't think it's going to be necessarily a big problem with him, but I do think you'll see him hung up a little more against really patient cornerbacks, because I think he has a little bit of that dance fever in him where he kind of moves around a little too much. I called Andy Isabella dance fever last year because because of it. He's one of those guys everybody gets excited about it in the All-Star games. And then it's like, well, that's great. But you're that guy who he's like the guy in those fights or boxing matches where they're dancing around everywhere and they're doing all these flips and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And the first time they like literally approach their opponent, the opponent just knocks them out before they ever even make that's how I feel about Andy Isabella when he's trying to work against the line, because it works great in practice, but I'm still waiting to see whether or not he's going to be something in the NFL of note. And I think he'll have to do it to be more efficient, but that's with CeeDee Lamb, that's absolutely the case. I agree with you, totally underrated. And then with Judy, I wonder about his acceleration, because I mean I think that his change of direction, quickness and movement and savvy kind of make up for that. And he needs a long runway to get up to speed. So that's a fascinating aspect of him too. I mean, again, I don't think any of this is really going to hurt him, but I have him third on my board just because I he's not far away from my number two guy, Denzel Mims, but they're, yeah, but and I know everybody says that when I I really do like what I saw from Mims, and I think his press man skills in terms of what he's developed, I'm technically from what I've seen, I think he's a guy that I'm really impressed with. But there's another guy on this board that I think when you talk about second day guys, I bet you like this guy, and I want to know what you think, because I know he's a favorite of mine, and that's Justin Jefferson.
Oh yeah, I mean he's the four guy to me, and like very clearly, behind. I'm not like unique at all in these rankings, but I think it's Lamb, Judy, Ruggs, and then Jefferson, like very very clearly. I think it gets interesting at five and gets hard for me at five too. But like, yeah, Jefferson. I mean, I'm always gonna love this type of guy, because I think similarly to Judy, like, both these guys played a lot of slot in college, and I think they can be slot type receivers in the NFL. And I think they can be used in the slot. And I think that I always comp these kind of guys to Keenan Allen. Like, I don't.
Yeah, me too.
I don't really either. Like, I think I just wrote in my Jerry Jeudy eval, like, if he actually becomes a good contested catch receiver, which it's hard to say whether he's going to be that based on what we saw at Alabama. Like, I don't think it's as bad as like Amari Cooper coming in or Calvin Ridley coming in, but I think that those guys are all interesting because they are very similar players. I think they come with similar concerns. But with Justin Jefferson and Jerry Jeudy, like, I think that at their peak, they can be a Keenan Allen type player. Cause like Keenan Allen plays a lot in the slot, but that's only because he's like a weapon in there. You know, it's not like he's not one of these guys that has to play. Like, if you want a Keenan Allen to go out and be your X receiver, he runs good enough routes and separates and wins at the catch point that it really doesn't matter. So I think these type of players can be that at their peak. And with Keenan Allen and this type of guy, like, again, every team could use a player like this. You know, team could use a guy that they can play at slot, flanker, X, that can get open and create separation and become a reliable target for a quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, Jefferson to me is like, I really want him to land with the Eagles. I've wanted him to land there since like January, because he is that refined route runner that I think will make an immediate impact. And like, the Eagles need so much help at wide receiver. If you need a slot guy, or like you're a slot guy, sure, you can make an immediate impact. You're an outside receiver, you can make an immediate impact. You're a deep threat, you can make an immediate impact. You're an after catch receiver, you can make an immediate impact with the Philadelphia Eagles, because they need help at every level. So he's a guy I'd love to see land there.
That is awesome. And it's funny because Jason Wood, football guy Jason Wood, said if he says that, I will run nude through the streets of Trumper Kennelon in Eagles country to get CeeDee Lamb. And if we follow with Justin Jefferson on a round or two, I'll even wear a MAGA hat as a thong. So
that's funny. Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be a round one pick, right? Like, I think Jefferson is going round one.
See, I think Justin Jefferson's going to go round one, too. I just did my first mock draft of the year that will be on Ross Tucker Monday. And I projected Justin Jefferson to the Minnesota Vikings, actually.
That would be an interesting one, because you kind of feel like they have that player, you know, the slot flanker guy in Adam Thielen. And, like, they could use, in theory, I think, a guy like Denzel Mims.
I'm sorry. That's who I have. I did that wrong. Where did I tell you the Vikings? Yeah, where did I put it? Let me look it up, because, you know, I was so – let's see. Here is it. I have Mims going to Minnesota. Oh, I have Justin Jefferson going to Philadelphia, the pick before.
See, there and you
then
go.
There we go. And the 49ers getting Ruggs and CeeDee Lamb going to Vegas. So. Nice. Yeah, I mean, and my shocker is LaVisca Chenault going to the Green Bay Packers. So we'll see.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, he's an interesting evaluation, because, I mean, he's good at the catch point. I think pretty good contested catch receiver. Very good, very fun in the open field. And he shows, like, just enough hints of a good release maybe developing that – like, I think he needs some seasoning, but I think he's worth a gamble for sure. Like, makes me think of like a DJ Moore type of development, you know, like how Moore in his rookie year, like, he couldn't run routes. He couldn't separate versus man coverage. He couldn't separate versus press. But like last year, after he took those steps that you knew he needed to, like, as long as he can become a passable route runner, he's so good after the catch. And he's so good at the catch point that, like, if Chenault does that same thing, he's definitely worth that. My favorite, like, guy I'd love to see go at the end of round one and or like in round two is Michael Pittman from USC. I think he gives me like those Allen Robinson vibes, where he's very clearly a good downfield receiver and a good play the ball in the air type of receiver. I think he's that type of guy, which Robinson is, but Robinson also, everybody who has followed me for years knows, I think he's like the best thing ever. And like, because I think he's a big wide receiver, he's very underrated as a route runner. I think Pittman shows a lot of that too. So he's a guy that I could see, like, just like Robinson in that 2014 class, going in the second round, but outperforming, you know, guys like Kelvin Benjamin, who gets drafted ahead of him and stuff like that. So Marquise Lee drafted ahead of on the same team, drafted ahead of Allen Robinson. So like, Pittman is a guy I would love, like, if some of these receiver needy teams, and let's be clear, there's a lot of teams that need wide receiver help. I did a top 10 worst receiver core article for Yahoo, which obviously everybody agreed with my picks. I was like, there's a lot of that. My takeaway coming out of it was like, there's a lot of teams that need wide receiver help, all the way from like the Jets, who have, you know, Stone Nothing, to, you know, teams like Green Bay or Denver, who have a very good number one receiver in obviously Davante Adams and Cortland Sutton kind of coming along there in Denver too. But they need so much help after that. You know, same thing with Minnesota. They have Thielen, but then they got nothing else. Like, there's a lot of teams in the second round that could take a receiver who can become a top outside guy right away.
Is there anybody else that you've watched that you want to mention that you know, just for whatever reason that it either intrigues you or whatever, you know?
Yes, because I want to talk to you about this guy, because I thought he was the toughest evaluation of the – these early round guys, and it's Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because, I mean, I get, like, again, he's the type of guy, because he's great after the catch. Like, I know people are going to love that big playmaker in the open field. And honestly, this is like a take that I don't think many people would agree with, or they would find correct. But I think, like, obviously I think Jerry Jeudy's the best route runner in this class, you know, from like a pure technique standpoint, but I thought Ayuk was like the best in terms of deception. You know, I think he's great at fooling cornerbacks, especially like if that he's going to go, like when they think he's, and you talk about this a lot too, because it's one of the most important things about playing wide receiver, like being able to sell your routes when you're going to go vertical, like you're going to sell them that you're going to come back on the curl before you go deep. I think Ayuk is really good at that. Like, I was surprised at how good he was with that I think he can be that vertical threat. But like, so much of his big plays, he averaged over 18 yards a catch last year. So much of his big plays come against off man or zone coverage that I'm like, I just knocked my mic over because I'm so like, how do you know what this guy's going to look like against you know, NFL press corners. Like, geez, yeah. He's a guy that, again, I think I have just have no idea how he's going to look like against those players. He takes a lot of projection that he's a player that I could be either like very worried about or sky high on based on where he goes in the NFL draft on Thursday or Friday night.
I totally agree. I have him 15th on my wide receiver board for exactly those reasons. He's great on those double moves. He's great against off man and zone. Put him on press in the limited time I saw him on press, and he just struggled. He couldn't do it.
I can't do it.
And yeah, and then so I'm like, okay, if he lands on a team where they've got two good wide receivers and they give him the matchups that are the prime, you know, the juicy matchup that's going to be the key thing for him to be mismatched against somebody. Yeah, I can see that working. And he can be clutch in certain situations with his technique.
Yes.
But man, he has some issues with his hands, like before those clutch moments where you're like, he's like that. He's like, how would I put it? The underachieving kid who's like late for class and like shows up and like, you know, he's probably he's like the kid who like the dog ate the homework. And then I was doing a physics experiment and, you know, instead of doing my math homework. And then suddenly like the science fair comes around for a scholarship and he creates something that like the Stanford wants to give him a scholarship, you know? I mean, yeah. So he's that kind of wide receiver. And I totally agree with that. And so for me, I couldn't rate him higher than I did. And I still have him rated like on my score from him is an 81, which is really a guy who could play. It's just a matter of where he fits to go. I kind of have him rated as, and I don't like the comparison I've given, but he's like he's a little like Golden Tate to me, but Golden Tate's rugged and Golden Tate had like different hand issues. But when he, again, like Ayuk, when he needed to like use his hands to win the ball the way you were supposed to, and it was a tough play, he'd go up and get it. And so I think Ayuk, it may not be one-to-one that way, but with a little more poetic license, there's some similarities to him. So yeah, I'm glad you brought him up.
I think that, I want to talk about landing spot. I want to talk about player comparison, but I'll go with player comparison first. Like Golden Tate is one that when I was tweeting about him, people came back with Golden Tate. They came back with Deebo Samuel, DJ Moore. And I think he comps to those players because he's really good after the catch and he can be really good at the catch point where, like you said, and all three of those players are actually, they're guys that are not elite separators, you know, against man or press coverage, which is why they have very particular roles, especially in the case of Samuel and Samuel and Moore. It's tough because they've only had, you know, 2 years, 1 year in the NFL between the two of them. But with Tate, I mean, he is who he is. He's had a long career, but he's always been that slot receiver guy. And I think you could play Ayuk there, but I think that he's like that, just those moments where he shows you that he can just destroy off man coverage from a vertical route running perspective, or the way he can sell those routes so well. I really want to use him in the downfield passing game in some way, like, which I don't think you're going to see a guy like Tate. I mean, Golden Tate's really never been that type of guy. No. So I think there's something there. So I ended up filtering through reception perception players, guys who had seen, who saw 25% or fewer of their routes where they faced press coverage, but also saw a good amount of man coverage. I posted the chart in the article. So you're looking at a very weird collection of players, which, by the way, this is why another reason why I love that I have this data sample from 2014 to 2019, because you can see so many different, you can see so many, an interesting mix of players here, and also like some random seasons, which led me to tweet about Waldman. Remember the fact that Terrell Pryor had 1,000 yards with the Browns one time? Because he pops up on this list. But there's a mix of like deep threats too. You know, your Tyler Lockett's, your Mike Wallace, your T.Y. Hilton, your Kenny Stills. Like if Ayuk hits the NFL field and a lot of those guys don't draw a lot of press coverage because they have to play off of corners have to play off of them because they have to respect their speed. They have to respect that vertical threat there. So that's one way that you could do it. If he hits the NFL field and makes like a lot of big plays, I think he could get a lot of off coverage in that way. But one player that actually just missed this threshold that I kind of think he's similar to is Tyrell Williams. And from a utilization standpoint, because look at Tyrell Williams' like best season in 2016. He's a guy who made big plays down the field, but where he was at his best was when they would just get him on crossing routes, get him in the open field, give him the ball, and he could make some big plays like that way. And I think Ayuk is best used in that way. And I mean, here's the deal though. Like, you know, Daniel Jeremiah's got him as his number five receiver in the draft class. Like, you know, I've seen Evan Silva tweeting about it, that he knows people in the NFL are higher on Ayuk than some of the other guys in this class. And like, maybe they're all wrong, but it leads me to think like he might be a surprising round one pick, you know, and yeah. I would just love to see him land with the Saints if that was the case, because it's the spot that, like you just said, if he ends up in a place where there's two good wide receivers. Obviously, in New Orleans, they've got Michael Thomas, and they just signed Emmanuel Sanders. Like, those guys can move all around the formation. Like, they can play at X because they're great route runners. They can play at flanker because they can benefit from the open space there, and they can obviously move inside of the slot. Then they get a third receiver like Ayuk there, who could be that sparing vertical threat, but really a guy that you get in the open field and move around. I think that'd be, like, if he lands there, I don't care, like, what I think about his game. I think he could be perfectly utilized in New Orleans.
Yeah, we could have a Chiefs Saints Super Bowl if the offenses were the only factor, you know.
Yeah.
That could be a lot of fun when you add that in there. I think that's a terrific option for him, you know, because then I think he might struggle would be a situation like if he had to go to Denver and just play opposite Cortland Sutton, and that's all
have. Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, me neither. So it's like, so that's very interesting from that standpoint. All right. So I've never really asked you this. Who's your favorite football player or some of your favorite football players, whether it's a receiver from all time or whether it's a, you know, and I figured Allen Robinson would be one of those names, but like who are some of your favorite football players, like past, present, or, you know, past or present at this point?
Yeah, I mean, let's stick with receivers because, I mean, one of the guys who led me to love the receiver position so much was Steve Smith from the Carolina Panthers, because everybody knows I have a complicated relationship with the Carolina Panthers. But so I grew up being a fan of them. And obviously, like, he's just, you know, he's the ultimate tone setter, like, you know, from a pure, like, better than he should be from a pound for pound perspective. I mean, he just sets the tone. And like, I also think he's kind of that underdog, like started as a great kick returner and then became just one of the best receivers ever. I mean, he's one of the few receivers to ever have the triple crown, you know, lead the NFL in catches, yards, and touchdowns. So like, I think he's probably my favorite football player ever. And then, I mean, when you're asking like, who's my favorite player in the NFL right now, I mean, receiver position, it's hard to say because I have so many, you know, children and I love them all equally. Plus, it's like hard to not, you know, the benefit of my job is that I get to end up talking to a lot of these guys too. Like, you know, Allen Robinson and I met after his 2015 season. He came by NFL Network and I interviewed him there. And, you know, we've stayed in touch, like to the point that at the Super Bowl, I didn't have him on my slate of interviews, but like saw him walking around and like, he came up and said, hey, to me. So like, it's hard to sparse those guys. Then there's a player like Derrick Henry, who's same thing. Like he's one of my favorite players to watch in the NFL, period. Like I want to say like, I definitely get like why running backs are devalued, but I wouldn't say it to Derrick Henry's face. And I also just want him to like buck the trend, you know, cause he's so much fun to watch. And he's just this, I mean, he's just an overwhelming and unique physical being. So he's another guy, like it's hard to now, which is, I think it's fun too, to like get invested with these players like personally and get to know them. Like Derrick Henry's a great example of like a guy that when I first interviewed him, and I've interviewed him and talked to him a couple times since, was in Nashville for the NFL draft last year. I had this like random PR guy like hit me up. He's like, hey, I got a client, Derrick Henry, if you want to come interview him, like you just have to do it. I'm like, sure, whatever, I don't care. And it was Tostitos like was the sponsor of the event, so I had him like rank, you know, his favorite dips or whatever. Just I like to ask some fun questions, like get to know more about them. And he said guacamole was trash, which I mean, I can't believe I still like him after that. Such a terrible opinion. but he's one of the nicest, like he's still the nicest player that I've ever that I've ever talked to. So like just getting to know these guys personally, I think is really fun. And it like changes your investment in them.
Well, two things I have to remark about. One is that there are two players that I very much would like to go to Canton to watch their Hall of Fame induction. And I really don't care about usually any of that stuff. Like, yeah. I really don't. But there are two players on my list. And I know our buddy Gene Bramble would come with me for each of those players. One of them's Marshawn Lynch. And the other one is Steve Smith.
Nice.
And Steve Smith is my absolute favorite wide receiver of all time as well. When I did my team to defend the planet, he was absolutely on that team because he will get under the skin of anyone. And I love the intensity in which he plays, the intelligence, the overall athletic toughness, pound for pound, the meanest, toughest, most physical receiver that in a small package, and just an unbelievable threat and just so intelligent. And it's so funny because like, I think the reason I knew I was going to be okay with my thoughts on Cooper Kupp was just, and I'm saying this in a dumb way, cause you know, I'm nuts about following my process and all of that, but I saw him on NFL Network. I was working out one day and I passed something where I saw just this little thing where on TV where they were watching the combine. And somebody was talking on NFL Network about wide receivers and Cooper. They were talking about some other wide receiver. But Cooper Kupp showed up on the screen for a workout and they just ignored him. They were talking about somebody else. And Steve Smith just cut off that part of the broadcast and was like, this is my best receiver in this class.
Nice.
This is the best one. And they're like, what? Why? He's like, because he knows how to run routes. This guy, he's like, that's the, and I just smiled and thought, I'm going to be okay this year with this particular guy. But
that's funny. But
do you, I think the other question I just want to ask you, you know, and Derek, you know, I agree with you about Derek Henry. I mean, he's a fun player to watch. And, you know, and with the running backs, so better as we joke about, I mean, listen, man, I just did a 2-hour thing with Dan Hatman at the Scouting Academy where I profiled Nick Chubb and we watched some of his runs against 7-man boxes or greater. And if you want a good example of why running backs matter, you're going to watch Nick Chubb actually help his blockers be able to get position on defenders where they were completely out of position at the begin as the run started to evolve. And he was the one that put the defender in position for the blocker to be able to reach him. So, you know, if you want an example of somebody who's like, you know, who can turn that running backs don't matter into, well, offensive linemen sometimes matter, it was Nick Chubb last year.
That's awesome.
Yeah. With that in mind, I mean, you talked about doing the interviewing of players and all the things that you've been doing with Yahoo, and you've had such a fun career just to follow from from an industry standpoint. You know, one of the things that I really love about following you and that I really admire about you from just a media perspective or an analyst perspective is that, you know, I'm one of these guys that I'm fine with embracing the role that like that I'm just kind of like the under the radar kind of in, you know, I have people who are like the really serious fan, quote unquote, you know, I have that kind of fan following. Whereas, you know, with Yahoo, you have a much broader appeal to people and you have to cultivate that kind of thing. And one of the things that I love about you is that you have the goods when it comes to, you know, what you analyze and how you see the game, but you also can kind of wink and nod through the stuff that kind of the more popular thing. And it's like you embrace it and you embrace it in a way though, that's not phony and it's not just playing to it, or it's not that you hate it. Like you actually look like, you know, from what I see, you're enjoying yourself, but you're doing it on a terms that everyone can look at you and go, like, look, man, I'm having a good time. Have a good time. Life's not serious all the time. You know, let's have fun with this. And it shines through so well. And I don't know if it's even fair to me to ask you how you do that, because I think that's just part of your personality. But I just wonder, you know, anything that comes to mind that I just commented about you with that, that if you were to talk about that, I would just love to hear about, you know, your thoughts when I say that.
Well, I mean, number one, thank you for being so nice to me and following my stuff. That means a lot. But like,
oh man, I love it. It's great, you know. And the best part is I get to make fun of you on Twitter, and you make fun of me back. So it's the best kind of relationship that way.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely the uncle type of relationship for sure.
I'm as proud of my nephew as I possibly can, because man, having you on the show and just what we talked about for the first 45 minutes is just great content, and we just picked it up, and you can go as deep as you want to go, you know, and then we can talk about this stuff here too, which is fun too.
I think there's so many different ways to go with it, but I think number one, like the first thing that you said, one of the things that you said there was like just not taking everything so seriously, you know, like people can tell when you're trying too hard, you know, like when you're trying to do something and it's not like, people like authenticity. People like you to be yourself. And whether that is, and people are pretty good, like with their BS meters these days, you know, like people can tell when you're trying to be something that you're not and when you're a phony. And so my thought was just always like, just like kind of be who you are, and like, just, if people like it, then you'll know. And if they don't, then you'll know. Like, and that's another thing too. What's beautiful about this era of, you know, content consumption is so much of it is done on social media, and so much of it is done on, like, we really are you're presenting a version of yourself every day on these platforms, and it's an immediate feedback type of thing, you know, like, you can go out there and, you know, you can write a piece and like never read the comment sections because it's garbage, right? Like, because who's going to want to know what just some random guy that popped on yahoo.com and saw an article about why I think Booger McFarland is actually, you know, needs to stay around in the NFL universe, which I did write this year, which I can't believe it, but we can talk about that later. Hey. Like,
you know, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that too. And I mean, I know people go lose their minds over him, but he doesn't drive me crazy like a lot of people.
It's all back to that like big brain football syndrome, you know, like we can have a little fun every now and again, and like Booger, if he wants to draw a damn penis on the screen twice in 1 year, by the way, like that's something we can laugh about, you know. It's okay to laugh at that. But so I think what I'm trying to say there's like, you know, you can like being out there on social media and like putting yourself out there, like a version of yourself, like people will let you know if they like what you're doing or not. Like, it's an immediate feedback type of thing. And like, you know, I've always just been like, look, if people like it, then I keep doing it. And if people don't like it, then I stop doing it. And, you know, I think for the most part, like I have been I mean, it's a blessing really to be able to put yourself out there and people to respond well to it. And for people to be like, yes, give us more of this BS, like this stuff that you're putting out there, you know? So I think for me, like I am a complex person within myself. Like I am not just Matt Harmon route dork, you know, like it's not the only thing that I want to talk about. I mean, I love to talk about
Cheeto or Doritos Raider or whatever, you know, or you know, Chips Raider or Chip Dip Raider, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Like I want to be good at all the things because I want to do all the things, you know, like I want to be able to do reception and be an authoritative voice on wide receivers because I put the time in to do it. And I'm not special. I don't have some gift for watching wide receivers. I put the time in to become good at it. So I want to continue to do it. But at the same time, like, yeah, I like to make food jokes. I like to just make sarcastic comments about the game. I like to just be a normal person watching football sometimes too, and be like, damn, that was crazy, huh? Like, you know, I think people like to have someone do it, like living that experience with them, and not just like, yeah, that was crazy. And it was because it was a sail route versus man coverage and he was lined up for in the slot. Like, no, people want you to just kind of be yourself and someone to have fun with. And also like I don't know. I'm rambling a lot here, but like I don't really know that there's any sort of, you know, technique or anything. It's just like,
no, I don't think there is either. But one question I'd have for you is this: that the higher the stage that you get on, or the bigger the stage that you get on, I would have to think that maybe there people feel a little bit more pressure about how much you show you are or not, at least at first. Does it get to a point where maybe the water gets warm and now you're used to it and you go, okay, it's not that bigger of a deal than it ever was before?
I think it's about kind of segmenting things too. Like, there's a certain level of, I mean, number one, I think you always, whenever you're a quote public figure, you know, which we both are, you know, we're out there doing things from a video perspective, a written perspective, an audio perspective, a social media perspective, where we're putting something of ourselves out there. You have to kind of decide, like, am I an open book, or am I a 90% open book? You know, what is just for me that I don't, you know, put out there? I'm pretty open with what I'm willing to share, but there's certain things I'm, of course, not going to talk about, or I'm not going to feel comfortable saying, like, you know, because I also realize, like, people probably don't care about every little thing that is going on in my life. And right. also because I definitely think that there are some things you need to just keep to yourself, because you're a normal human being and you don't need to do everything out there. You don't need to put everything out there. But I also think, like, I'm not nervous about, like, any sort of stage, you know. I think it's just, I try to just approach everything like I'm working really hard for this to be a good thing. And if I'm working really hard for it, that means that I care about it. But never care so much that, like, I need to get in my head about it, because I don't know. I remember the first few times, like, I went on like an NFL Network show. It's called Up to the Minute. Now it's called NFL Now. But, like, that was a total coup for me to get myself on, because it was, you know, I wasn't talking fantasy football. I was on there just talking NFL football, you know, and, like, that's tough to do at any company, much less it's tough to do at, like, right. It's tough to the do it like the company. But, you know, I had been cultivating a role, like, working with the Next Gen Stats, like, player tracking data. I thought that was kind of my way into talking normal football stuff. And, you know, I just sent a producer an email one day. I'm like, hey, I'm Matt Harmon, blah, 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 whatever. Like, I just think this would be a good fit for your show. Todd Sperry, shout out to Todd Sperry. He was a good guy. He was open to it. I ended up doing 3 hits before I got hired away to go to Yahoo. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, I remember sitting to myself, like, this is a huge deal. Like, I could be super nervous about this, but, like, if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down just being myself. And I went out there, I was myself. And, you know, I'll never forget Dave Schott, the director of, like, he, like, manages all the reporters, you know, the Jane Slaters, the Ian Rappaports, those type of people at NFL Network. He had sat right next to my boss's office, and I sat right outside of my boss's office for 3 years at the NFL. Different bosses, but, you know, point being, he had the same office. He came after my third appearance. He came out there. He's like, dude, that was unbelievable. He's like, I didn't even know, like, he's like, I never knew you were that, like, boisterous, or that, like, you had that much, like, spunk to you. He's like, I normally just see you sitting here, like, doing your work and being quiet. I'm like, he's like, I didn't know you had that in you. I was like, that's who I am. You know, so that's just, I think it's just all about, like, being comfortable with yourself to a point that, like, you can show people that to whatever extent it is that you want to do.
Yeah. And you remind me of the way you do that reminds me of a roommate I once had in college. He's a performer, and I remember asking, and he always was at ease up on the stage. And I remember just asking him what his process was. And the thing that he came across was, is that everyone wants to have a good time. If they're going to come to see you play, unless they're just abnormal and evil, you know, spirited people, they want to have a good time. And to have a good time, they want to forget about all their problems, all the bills, all the issues that they're dealing with, and they just want to escape. And it's your job to get them to escape.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you kind of have to break through that bubble that's in that room, so that, and sometimes to do that, you have to be kind of funny. You have to have the energy. You have to do something a little goofy or whatever it is to just get people to, like, just get sucked into what you're doing in that moment and be in the moment. And once you can be in that moment, then you're giving people what they want.
Yeah.
And I think that you do that really well.
And I think the most important thing is to, like, don't be afraid to hold an L every now and again. Like, people, yeah, like you said, people want to be escaped. People want to escape. They want to be entertained. Like, You know it's a great way to let people be entertained is to laugh at you every now and again. So if you make mistakes, and look, in this business, we're all like, with fantasy and football, like, we're all going to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to own those, and don't be afraid to let people make fun of you. And every now and again, like, I still get people that will tweet me about when James Coe back at the NFL Network, before I'd even ever been on TV, by the way. So it was like, almost like, I was almost annoyed about this, but like, you know, one day, this was when Josh Gordon came back to the NFL, like, for the 100th time. and he came back, and I don't think he ever actually played, but like, I remember when he got drafted, you know, I wrote this article about, like, you need to draft Josh Gordon like the fifth round because blah, 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 blah. You know, I know he's been suspended, but yeah. And like, James talked about the article on air, and he goes, Matt Harmon, who's an idiot, wrote about this. They wrote about why you should be Josh Gordon in the fifth round. And ever since then, I mean, I still get people that will say Matt Harmon, who's an idiot. And like, that stuff got to be like, can't get mad about it. Got to like, just laugh at it. It's all part of the fun for you and for everyone else.
Hey, listen, I still have Josh Gordon on two dynasty teams right now.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I'm an idiot, you know, but that's so. But on that front, listen, you've entertained this idiot here for a nice hour and gave us a lot of great information. And it was just so much fun to be able to catch up with you. And I know we could do a lot more, but I want to, you know, I know it's Friday evening, and give you a chance to spend some time and hang out with those people important to you. And I'm going to do the same thing. And listen, you can follow Matt Harmon, of course, on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. You find him at Yahoo Sports. You can find him with the Fantasy Footballers Package with the reception perception analysis, as you saw, you know, heard a sample of. It's, you know, it's great, 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 great work. I couldn't recommend his work highly enough. So please go out and get that. And, you know, you will benefit. You will absolutely benefit. You'll learn a lot from his work. And you'll have a good time as well when you listen to him on Yahoo Sports and some of the stuff that he does there. That's also, you know, a combination of, you know, strong analysis and as well as, you know, a good sense of humor and entertainment. So thank you again for everyone for listening to the RSP cast. Of course, if you're new to this show and you came over because of Matt Harmon, which I certainly would understand, you can follow me at Matt Waldman. You can also find my work at mattwaldmanrsp.com. The Rookie Scouting Portfolio is a ginormous document that really you only have to read about 500 pages of, if you'd like to, of 151 prospects, and it's available at mattwaldman.com. And a percentage of that does go to a charity entitled Darkness to Light, which is to prevent sexual abuse of children, as well as help them if they have been abused, so that the community can rally around them and handle that appropriately, unlike what we saw with, say, Michigan State and Penn State and several years ago. And Allie Rossman's a good example of someone who is a spokesperson for Darkness to Light and is working with them to help universities and different athletic programs be able to get training. So on that note, thanks again, and you guys have a terrific week.